Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Mile High Hoops with Zach Bye.
What is up and welcome to another edition of the Mile High Hoops podcast. I am your host, Zach Bye. Thank you so much for dropping by yet again here on the pod. I have a fun little episode planned here, something that we have never done here on the Mile High Hoops pod, and that is we are going to have a trainer who I've known for a very, very, very long time, who was a trainer of an NBA draft pick last week. Elijah Hughes, the ACC's leading scorer out of Syracuse, has been working out with Steve D'Agostino in upstate New York. He is my former teammate, a.k.a. Dags. He is a longtime trainer. He was the trainer of Kevin Huerter, also of the Atlanta Hawks, for many years, and also coming out of the NBA draft. He also trained Joe Cremo that played his senior season at Villanova for Jay Wright, the first ever grad transfer in the history of that program. So he's been around. Hamir Wright, who is at UConn this year. I mean, just a host of different I said Hamir Wright. He's at Washington. Andre Jackson, excuse me, the freshman coming in to UConn, has trained with Dags. So I want to tap into, you know, what that process is like, especially during a COVID period that is unlike any other in the history of the pre-draft process, and what that was like. And Dags had a pair of not draft picks. One of them was drafted, Elijah Hughes. Another was assigned immediately after the draft. And so I want to tap into Dags and get his also thoughts on the Nuggets. He was my college teammate. He was a first-team All-American at the Division II level. He was invited to Portsmouth. He played overseas for a half a decade. So he's been around. He knows his stuff. So we're going to tap into what he thinks of the Nuggets, some of these undrafted free agents, what he thought of the R.J. Hampton pick, and what the pre-draft was like, the process was like, if you are a trainer of one of these guys that is going to get drafted. So that will be an interesting conversation that we'll tap into in just a second. But before we do that, I just want to share a couple thoughts, first and foremost, about what went down just a couple days ago with Jeremy Grant's departure. Oh, boy. I am not one of these guys, and there's not a lot out there, but I did have seen some of it, that are dismissive of the loss of Jeremy Grant. I am not one of those guys. I think that this move that happened here in the last couple days of Jeremy Grant deciding not to be a Denver Nugget and going to Detroit was a shocking decision. And I can speak for myself, I was shocked. And I think that if you made Tim Connelly and Mike Malone do a double shot of truth serum, I think that they would tell you that they were floored. I believe that they had information leading up to the, and I'm speculating here, but they must have had enough. These are smart guys, all right? When I'm talking about the brass of the Nuggets, Tim Connelly is a really, really bright guy. I think that they were given assurances that were then pulled out from underneath them. That's what I think happened. Trying to figure this thing out is both simple if you look at it from one lens and a little bit more complicated if you look at it through another. I think that the loss of Jeremy Grant is a very big deal. Okay, I think it's a very big deal. I think that Jeremy Grant, and if you've been a listener of this podcast for any duration of time, you've heard me talk glowingly, not just about Jeremy Grant and himself isolated as a player, although we've done that too, and just how he's improved through the years after being drafted at such a young age, also coming out of Syracuse. He was part of like the rebuild 76ers, and you can tell watching Jeremy Grant through his career how much time he has put into his craft. He has improved vastly as a three-point shooter, improved vastly as a defender. I thought he was the perfect fit, like aside from him isolated as an individual player, who he was as a player and a person, by the way. Or so I thought, and I don't mean that to say backhanded about him as a guy, but I thought he was the perfect fit for Denver on the court, as well as him being low maintenance and a perfect culture fit. He doesn't need the basketball to be successful. He turned himself into a pretty decent catch-and-shoot player, especially from the corner. Now, I know he had his ups and downs in the playoffs. I got all that. But I also saw that guy guard some of the best basketball players on planet Earth. And I just don't know who is going to take that burden from Grant. And not saying that Jeremy Grant is like the world's greatest defender, is an all-NBA defender. No, but he did a good job, and I thought he was a pretty good matchup for what the Nuggets had to throw at guys like LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard. And I just don't see a guy on this roster right now that is going to be shouldering that burden when it matters in playoff series. Now, the Denver Nuggets still have an awesome roster. Like, this is not all doom and gloom. I'm not like, you know, going in a depressive state because of what happened with Jeremy Grant. But I don't like what I see defensively from the personnel on the Nuggets when it gets to a point in the second round of the playoffs. I think they're still going to win a crap ton of regular season games because they have the roster to do it. But Jeremy Grant added a different element that they just don't have right now. He was a top-tier NBA athlete at that position. And, man, he's so long and has a good IQ and is still ascending. And that was the thing about Jeremy. It was like he fit right in with the like lockstep with the rest of the Nuggets core and where they're at in their development. And I thought they were all going to grow together here. And I think the Nuggets thought that too when they gave up a first round pick for him this past year. And for him to only be here for a hot second, them play as well and accomplish as much as they accomplished, for him then to hit the bricks for Detroit for the same exact money, that's the part where a minute ago I said I thought I knew about him as a culture fit, blah, 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 because he took the same exact money to play for a Detroit Pistons team that is not going to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Like, he's leaving a situation, he's leaving a championship window that he would have been a starter for. Like, unequivocally, this year, Jeremy Grant was going to be your full-time starter. And I don't understand that mindset. From me personally, for leaving a situation. Yeah, I know what are you, the fourth option? Well, some nights you'd be the second or third option. But, like, you're leaving this situation as a starter in a Western Conference Finals team to go to a Detroit Pistons team that I don't know what they're doing. And it's not like they gave him more money. The Denver Nuggets, as reported by so many, they matched the $20 million amount per year offer. Now, we can have a separate conversation whether Jeremy Grant is worth $20 million. And I guess it's situation by situation, right? Like, we looked at the Milwaukee situation with their trade and the Kings, you know, haul that the three first-round picks, multiple starters. And I made sure to say, look, what's right for the Bucks is not right for the Nuggets. Just because they're both in championship windows, their situation and scenarios are totally different for all the reasons that we know and understand with the Giannis stuff. And got it. But, like, to take the same money for a more and I lost my train of thought there. For the Nuggets to give Jeremy Grant $20 million, you could make an argument that Grant is not worth $20 million. I was trying to guess where it would be with our producer, Stephen Priest, and I said, you know, maybe they'll give him $15 million, and that seemed like a lot per year. But for the Nuggets to say, we understand how important Jeremy Grant is, even though he might not be worth $20 million to these other teams, but for us right now, he is a big part of our plan. That's why we traded the first-round pick. We're gonna go ahead and we are going to overpay him. We are going to give him the $20 million a year. And then for him to say no to that, and take the same money and go play for the Detroit Pistons. That on one hand, you could say, okay, he believes in himself. He's betting on himself. He's going to go try to continue to master his craft. I just talked about how much better he's gotten since he got drafted years ago. Maybe he thinks he's on a trajectory where he can be, you know, a number one or number two option on an NBA team that's trying to compete. And right now, I just don't see that. And I'm disappointed. I really am, and I think you can hear it in my voice, and I'm not trying to be too, you know, over-sensationalize it, but I'm disappointed in this decision from Jeremy. I think that I understand it. I understand it, if that's what he's trying to do, but I thought that he'd prioritize winning. Winning is fun. Being a part of a winning culture is fun, and that's what he's leaving to join the Detroit Pistons. And trying to make sense of it, I shake my head. Because, you know, JaMychal Green, who, you know, they brought in, I don't know, obviously much smaller deal. He's just, he is a okay player. You know what he is? He's an NBA player. Like he's an NBA player. And Jeremy Grant was a really good ascending NBA player. And I think the Nuggets, from a roster standpoint, took a step back this past weekend when he decided to make the move that he made, as blindsiding as it was. All right, we are going to shift gears here. In reality, I'm going to go do a three-hour talk show. And then after that, we are going to be joined by Steve D'Agostino, and that's coming up next. All right, and we are joined now by a guy that I know very, very well, who you don't know very, very well, but I want to introduce you to him. It's Steve D'Agostino from upstate New York. He was my college teammate at the College of St. Rose, which is in one of the highest-rated Division II conferences in the country. Steve was an All-American first team, invited to Portsmouth, went through the pre-draft process himself, ended up playing overseas in, gosh, Steve, where were you? Iceland?
Italy, Spain, Iceland, England, Hungary.
Yes, there you go. And now you could have played much longer than you did, but you came home, you started a family, and you started Dags Basketball. And I was the very first employee, never forget that, of Dags Basketball.
Never.
Through the years, you have trained so many guys. Just give us a quick rundown of guys that you have had training sessions or interactions with.
Yeah, so most of them are East Coast guys, but, you know, the national guys that some of you may know, Kevin Herter, who plays for the Atlanta Hawks, most recently Elijah Hughes, who just signed with Utah, Nathan Knight, who signed with the Hawks as well, too. We have Andrew Playtech from the University of North Carolina, Joe Cremo, who played at Villanova, Joe Girard, who's at Syracuse. So we've got guys at you know, all levels of college and pro basketball.
Yeah, and it's just awesome what you have built that into. I want to talk about a bunch of different things here today with you. But first, and I also want to include that in addition to everything that we just talked about, you have been one of the court coaches for USA Basketball in the last, what, I'd say like a year or two, is it?
Yeah, it's 2.5 years now. So I USA Basketball has kind of revamped their junior national team, and what they do is they meet with the top 20 players in each high school age group like three times a year, and the fourth time would be if you're good enough to make a training camp for one of their national teams under 16, 17, 18, and 19.
And what type of coaches have you had interactions with USA Basketball?
Yeah, so the first time I went out was to help out with the under-18 training camp with Bill Self. That was in 2018. Mike Bray was also so he wasn't an assistant on that staff. He was a court coach as well, just helping the coaches go through the training process. And then Danny Manning was an assistant. Anthony Grant, who's an awesome coach from Dayton, was also an assistant coach. And then for the junior national team, like all their mini camps, most of the coaches are some of the best high school coaches in the country. So Mike Jones from DeMatha High School, he took over as the lead coach from under 16 and under 17 as well, too. So some of the best high school coaches. And the other skills trainer, I'm one of two skills trainers. The other skills trainer out there is Phil Beckner out of Arizona, who trains Damian Lillard and probably another 10 to 15 NBA guys as well.
Okay, so I'm glad we did that, just sort of setting the stage of who you are, because you're being introduced to a brand new Nuggets-centric audience today.
Yeah.
Well, and real quick, before we get into some of the stuff, like what was it like being a trainer during COVID of this pre-draft process? It's been such a wacky year for someone like yourself.
Yeah.
But the big news around here, and our listeners just heard me talk about it, the departure of Jeremy Grant. I'd say that you know, I was blindsided, might even be an underestimate. And I don't like even get blindsided because it's the NBA and crazy stuff happens right. every year. I did not see this right. one coming. You know the dynamics at play. Do you have a quick thought to share on that?
Yeah, it's just it's interesting, right? Because as the Nuggets fans know, he was such a big part of their season this year and their playoff run. And you're watching, you're like, man, like this is our future. We got Jokic and Jeremy Grant in the front court. Like that's near unstoppable. And to see somebody, especially now in a league where everybody's chasing rings, right? Player wise, they want to team up with other really good players and form these super teams and. You know, to go the total opposite way, right? You're not getting any more money, but, you know, under the guise of, hey, you could come here and be the man, I guess he's betting on himself for his next contract and also possibly that he's going to have the ability to lift the Pistons out of, you know, whatever situation they're in near the bottom of the league now is. It's just crazy. You don't see guys doing that now. If it was for more money, you could justify it, but I don't know. It just seems like he was in such a great scenario and organization, you know, with an organization that was readily developing him, you right. know, and it just shocked not only Nuggets fans, but I think everybody across the country.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, and I said this previously, I think that if he gave team president, Tim Connelly, a shot of truth serum, I think he'd tell you he was floored by this decision. Yeah. And you can't do anything. Like, you're offering him $20 million to be your fourth option on a team that's trying to win a title. And that was just insane. And now the Nuggets have to figure it out. They have to find a different avenue to get where they wanted to go without that guy. Man, I just thought it was a perfect fit. I'm still like physically shaking my head as we're having this conversation because I'm still trying to comprehend what his thought process is. And I wonder if anything else was at play here. Something else underneath the surface behind the scenes that we just don't realize yet.
And there might have been, but like at the end of the day, and you and I talked about this all the time, do you trust the organization to now bounce back? And also, you know, like you talk about $20 million for a year for a fourth option, it gets to a point where the numbers don't make any sense. So, right, to even go back to him with more, it's like, hey, this guy doesn't want to be here for X amount of dollars, and in the long run, we're going to get hurt if we give him any more. So, you know, it's almost like you couldn't do anything about it anyway.
Yeah, and that's a tough pill to swallow. It really is. All right, you were training Elijah Hughes. Well, who's Elijah Hughes? If you're maybe a big fan out here of, you know, the Pac-12 or the Mountain West, maybe you don't know Elijah Hughes. But Elijah Hughes was the ACC's leading scorer for the Syracuse Orangemen. During this process, talk about a little bit about who Elijah is. He signed with the Utah Jazz. He got selected by the Utah Jazz. What pick was he, like 43rd or something?
39.
All right, so terrific position for him. He goes to a stable organization in Utah. The Nuggets are going to see a lot of Elijah Hughes. Exactly who is this guy, and what should Nuggets fans be preparing for?
Yeah, so Elijah, first and foremost, he's a really good dude, high character guy, had a really good career at Syracuse, originally went to East Carolina for a year and then transferred out to Syracuse, sat a year, and has had two really good years. His most recent year is a leading scorer in the ACC. So, you know, if you're a leading scorer in the ACC, you can put that thing in the basket. So he's just a scorer. You know, he's a hooper. He's 6'6", 230 pounds, has a great NBA body, and you know, this pre-draft process was interesting for him, not only because it was longer. Usually it's, 2.5 months. You're in, you're out. You get their body in great shape. You get their shot looking really good. You get them confident heading into all their team workouts in the NBA combine. Then they get drafted and they're out. And this last pre-draft process lasted almost 7 months for us. And it was a lot of, especially in New York and most of the country, you couldn't go live. So it's not like we could have, normally you'd have 3-on-3 games, 5-on-5 games, so they're staying sharp and competing.
Right.
You couldn't have any of that. And Elijah is more of like a, and you know this, act like a hooper. Like one of these guys, he just wants to play.
Right.
Like, yes, he wants to work out and get better and stuff, but at the end of the day, like, he wants to hoop and play. So that was, I think, tough for him to not have that opportunity, especially for the last, 3 or 4 months that we were together. But I think that's too why you saw a lot of emotion with a lot of these guys during this is probably think about it, do you remember a draft where this many guys like cried when they got picked?
No.
Right? So like, so you know, some people are like, ah, this generation, like it was a long 7 months. And to the point where, like, they were supposed to be drafted in June. It got pushed back to October. It was supposed to be October. Then it was going to be November. And then all the changes to the combine and the way teams could see you, I just think it was, like, a huge relief for a lot of these guys where, you know, a day that was supposed to happen 3 or 4 months before that they might have never thought was going to actually happen. So, he got drafted, pretty much expected where he was going to get drafted. So everything worked out really, really well. And, you know, I'm happy to see him go to a really good organization where, again, he's going to have the chance to learn from Donovan Mitchell, learn from Quinn Snyder, and be put in a position where he's going to be able to develop and help them over the next couple of years.
Yeah, he's going to be an interesting name to watch. Do you expect him to play earlier in his career, or is he like more of a guy like the way that we're viewing an R.J. Hampton? Like maybe he's going to get on the court, but maybe in 2 or 3 years he could be, you know, in a starting role.
Yeah, you never know, right? So, like, the Jazz don't have a ton of guys on the wing that can put the ball in the basket. They're more, like, defensively minded, and Elijah's just a guy that can score. So, you know, you sit there, you put yourself in a position to get drafted, and then, you know, it's on him. He goes in and has a great training camp and gets an opportunity in a couple games early because it's such a funky season. You know, and he puts that thing in the basket and shows he can play D, then, yeah, I see no reason why, like, these teams now, you know, need, especially the Jazz, who, you know, Donovan Mitchell went and got them 35 a night in the playoffs.
Right.
You know, at some point, they need other guys to be able to put the ball in the basket without Donovan Mitchell having to create for himself and others. And Elijah's that guy. He's not only a guy that can make threes, but he doesn't need a screen to put the ball in the basket. He's really, really good in isolation. He can finish at the rim or mid-range, and even with, like, his step-back threes, too. So I think that's what kind of separates him from other guys who are just kind of like 3-and-D type guys.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that, like, hey, take some of the burden off the plate of Donovan Mitchell. And I'm having flashbacks to the bubble games where down the stretch of games, it was Jamal Murray and more Jamal Murray and more Jamal Murray, where the burden of that offense was so great. And fortunately for the Denver Nuggets, he came up spades, you know, time after time. And it was, you know, historic, literally, to watch him and Donovan Mitchell, the other guy we're talking about, go head to head. And it sort of looked the same from a burden standpoint. And that's what I think some of Denver Nuggets fans are hoping that RJ Hampton can eventually bring to the table. A 6'5", 6'6", a point guard who's got a 6'7" wingspan. This was a kid that was highly touted coming out of high school. He didn't go to college. He goes to the NBL, their league, mostly based out of Australia. He played for the New Zealand Breakers in the same league as LaMelo Ball. He's young, Dags. Give us some of your thoughts on R.J. Hampton.
Yeah, so R.J. Hampton's an athlete. He's kind of like stuck in between. I know he kind of fancies himself as a point guard, but, you know, he only averaged, I think, a couple of assists a game.
Yeah, it's like 2.5.
NBL.
And
Yeah, and like the NBL is a good league. It's solid. It's grown men. It's guys are getting paid, you know, anywhere from $200,000 to $800,000 a year. Like, guys can play, you know, and the difference – team-wise between his team and LaMelo's team was LaMelo's team is like the worst team in the league, you know, and RJ's team is good. They're trying to win games. So, you know, that right away puts you in a different kind of category when your team's trying to win games and they don't let you just do whatever you want. But, you know, he's a guy who shot 29% from three, so that's got to get better. You'd like to see his assist numbers go up as well, too. But, like, you know, it reminds me of the Michael Porter Jr. pick for the Nuggets, where there's value. I mean, a year before, RJ Hampton was slated to be like a surefire top five guy.
Yep.
And you know this, especially like we see with grad transfers in college basketball. Like, you go to one place for a year, especially when you're not the guy for the year, anything can happen. You know, so like, who's to say that if RJ Hampton didn't go, you know, went to Duke instead, like maybe he would have still been a top five guy. So I think there's a ton of value in the pick. I also think that, you know, the knock on him is maturity. And so going to an organization like the Nuggets, where they're win now and they have a lot of guys who have been through the fire and have grown up themselves, right? It seems like only a couple of years ago we were talking about, like, who who's going to be the dog every night for the Nuggets. And you saw in the bubble that they had multiple guys step up. So, I think that he's in the spot where the things that he needs to address are going to be there for him to address.
Well, it's interesting because you referenced that year for RJ Hampton with the Breakers there in the NBL. And, you know, I saw Mike Miller, who he's been training with as his primary mm-hmm. trainer. He recruited him there at Memphis for, you know, years. He started recruiting him when he was a sophomore. And, you know, Mike Miller said that, look, because this guy, he's played a large role throughout his life on teams, but he went to a small role in the NBL, and that's actually going to help him going to the Nuggets because yeah. Nuggets have a bunch of guards. I mean, there's no guarantee that RJ Hampton is going to get on the floor his rookie right. season. And Mike Miller yeah. saying, hey, because of that experience overseas, he said a lot of these guys coming into the NBA are going to go through a shock process because yeah. it's not all about them anymore. And he said that yeah. this guy, RJ Hampton's been told no. You know, playing for a team that's trying to compete overseas. Do you like that? Do you like that observation there from Mike Miller?
I love it. I mean, there's two ways that when you get drafted in the league, basically, is we saw it with our guy with Herter and the Hawks. Like they drafted they have a young core for the last 2 years that they drafted, and you know those guys were able to learn as they were playing. Right, that it wasn't. You turned it over, you're out, like come out of the game. There wasn't a lot of that because they weren't necessarily slated to win a ton of games, right? So, like, you could go to a team where winning may not be in the short-term future of the team, so they're allowed to make mistakes. But the other way is to grow through competition and to really learn, right? Like Aaron Rodgers with the Green Bay Packers. Like, he sat there for years, learned from Brett Favre in a winning organization, was ready to go. So you just hope that they're still able to – these young guys are able to develop when they are in those situations with G League games, with some time up with the NBA teams as well too. But they learn from every day in practice and how everybody goes about their business and gets that winning mentality in their head early.
Well, I hope that that's the case for RJ Hampton because you look at the Nuggets and who they've been under Tim Connelly, they have developed young players just as good as anyone else in professional basketball. It has been so fun to watch their process and some of these guys through the years truly develop. And not every organization is like that. Not every organization has to be like that. But the Nuggets, their existence in the world of free agency is just, they're not going to get some of these guys who are going to go to, you know, one of the LA teams or Miami or fill in the blank. So they have to go about it this way. So I think that's the good news for RJ Hampton is he doesn't have to play. This is already a team that's going to be very good. Even with the departure of Jeremy Grant, the Nuggets are going to win a bunch of basketball games. There's no pressure on him to produce right away. And, you know, just, you plant the seed and keep on watering it, and good things are going to happen. So I'm hopeful that in time, you know, even if it takes to year three, year four, that RJ Hampton finds himself in a starting role because he's got NBA size, elite NBA size for that position. He's got the athleticism yep. to play the position, but he's still, yep. you know, he's a piece of clay. So
he's 19 too. You know what I mean? So he's young as anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Any thought? I know, you know, RJ Hampton a little bit better than Zeke Nnaji, but any thought coming out of that pick at 22 from Zeke Nnaji?
Yeah, I think anytime you can get a big guy that's an efficient scorer, and you know the thing they say about Nnaji is that he's got great hands and he's got great touch around the basket. So, and he can guard multiple positions. So you put those things together, and you know you're seeing a really good future for that kid. I was really impressed with just his upbringing that they went through on draft night, and that he plays the piano, and he seems like a very smart and thoughtful person, you know, and you know, the NBA is got a lot. You see a lot of these guys that are having success are ones that are, you know, very smart in their own right and are professional and understand how to conduct themselves on a daily basis. So, I was just really impressed with him. And then I was also like, even before he got drafted, I just remember, you know, following Arizona as one of my favorite teams and just following Nico Mannion and Josh Green and those are supposed to be the two studs, and Najee comes in and wins like the Pac-12 freshman of the year.
Yep.
And was like from the rip, like his first three games, he was like one of the first players in the last whatever 10 years or so at Arizona that averaged 20 and 10 in the first in his first three games as a Wildcat. So just have always been really impressed with him, and I think he's going to do really well under the Nuggets' guidance.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're right on that. You've also had legitimate interaction with a couple other guys that went drafted in the first round last week. Tyrese Maxey, who was taken 21st overall out of Kentucky. He went to the 76ers. Cole Anthony, more of a well-known player for sure, was at the University of North Carolina. He got picked at 15 by the Orlando Magic. And then Kyra Lewis Jr., who I think went 13th overall. You worked with these guys down in Colorado Springs with USA Basketball. Give me a thought on a couple of those guys.
Yeah, so Tyrese Maxey is just like, his attitude is unbelievable. Shows up with a smile every day. It's contagious. You can tell he has fun while he plays. I think, and I was saying this to one of our trainers earlier today, we were talking about him, and just he's going to figure it out. You know, I don't know what he does best in his game right now. Like, he's not a knockdown three-point shooter. He's not necessarily like a point guard, but he's going to figure it out. He's too good of a teammate and too good of an overall basketball player to not have success in the league. So I think the Sixers are going to find a way to use him, and you know, he'll be good there. Cole Anthony saw his stock kind of drop a little bit after his year at North Carolina because it was such a crazy year for them as a team, and then him you know, messing his knee up a little bit and then coming back. But he's a leader. He's always been a leader. He's got the NBA pedigree. He's another one where, you know, Bill Self said this to me, and it was the first time I heard it, and I couldn't get it out of my head from watching him from there on out, was, you know, Cole Anthony's really explosive vertically, so he gets up, hammers it, tip dunks, all that stuff, but he's not, like, super fast horizontally. So, like, so he doesn't have blow-by speed, and so I've always seen that, but even with that in the NBA, although having blow-by speed is nice, he's too good of a leader. He'll find himself in a really good role for the Magic, and I'll see – you know, I wouldn't be surprised if his stock keeps rising. And then the last guy, Kyra Lewis, who is at Alabama, he's intriguing for a couple different ways. That year at USA Basketball, out of all the guards that were there, he ended up getting cut. You would have had him towards the bottom of your list of Cole Anthony, Maxey, Rocket Watts, who's at Michigan State. And he was actually a lot younger than everybody there. So he went, when he got on Alabama's campus, he was 16. He went like a year early, graduated from high school early. So he got 2 years of college basketball under his belt before he went to the draft. And he's still one of the youngest players in the draft this year. And, you know, he developed so much just by Alabama saying, here, take the ball, you're going to lead us. And he got that game development in college, and he went higher than all these guys. So it's a testament to his hard work as well, and his work ethic and his rise. So I'm excited to watch him play too.
I want to shift gears here back to the Nuggets and who went undrafted that could be a part of this basketball team. Marcus Howard, not a lot of expectation that this guy is going to be on the court for Denver anytime soon, if at all ever. But it's one of these things where, like, if I told you that a player led all of college basketball in scoring at 28 points a game, he shoots 41% from three, he's a first-team All-American, he's Marquette's all-time leading scorer, and he also reclassified in high school. He was at Marquette early as a 17-year-old, and he doesn't get drafted. Like, it just shows you the emphasis on size. He's just 5'11". I know you've watched a lot of Marcus Howard. Give me some of your thoughts on him.
Yeah, he's just a bucket. You know, he just can score the freaking ball. And so, you know, it comes down with these smaller guys in the NBA. It comes down to what they're going to give you versus ultimately what you know they're going to give up on the defensive end. And so, you know, you guys have had success in the league at 6 foot and under, but they've been unbelievable scorers, and they've done like just enough on the defensive end. So for guys like him, it's good to take a flyer, especially, you know, all those accolades that you were saying. And we'll see, and I'm sure he'll be in the G League, and I'm sure he'll get a shot to come up, and we'll see if he can figure it out on the defensive end enough to not only produce on the, because, right, it's a different game in the NBA. He's got to produce on the offensive end too, but then if he's able to do that, can he do enough on the defensive end to justify him being on the court?
Yeah, I do have a feeling, though, we're going to, like, you're going to get like a not necessarily an alert because you don't get G League alerts, but I have a feeling this guy's going to have like 45-point games in the G League.
Yeah, yeah. For sure, I'd bet money on that right away, for sure.
Another undrafted guy that I think a lot of Nuggets fans are curious about, I'm going to try to not screw up this name, Facundo Campazzo?
I just say Campazzo.
I know it's Campazzo. I'm still struggling with that first name. I'll get it. He's another undersized guard that just 5'11". He's from Argentina. He's on the older side. He's 29 years old. But as soon as he signed with Denver, you started sending me videos. You are tapped in to overseas basketball. What can you tell us about Campazzo?
Dude, I love him. I love him. And I mean, I sent you those videos. The Nuggets are going to see, you know, I'm sure that they'll be posting some of his videos while he was at Real Madrid or playing with the Argentinian national team. But 5'11", he's JJ Barea. So these international guys are interesting, especially the guards, right? Like some of them come over and they find a great fit and teams that understand how they play and let them play the way that they, you know, are good at and they thrive, and others just, they don't find the right fit. They're not tough enough and they just kind of flounder out. But this guy is literally Barea. So for fans of the NBA for the last 10 or 12 years, if you remember the Mavs when they were winning championships or the one championship, like they let Barea run around ball screen and do whatever he wanted, right? He would break guys off with, great passes. He could finish at the rim. Remember, like, Dwight Howard, like, shoved him to the floor the one time, and he, like, finished, right? Like, he was hitting threes. Like, if the Nuggets let him do that, he's going to be super fun to watch. And the difference between him and Howard, there's a couple. Number one, obviously, he's older. He's 29. He's won the Euro League twice, which is the second best league in the world next to the NBA. He's won the Spanish League Championship 3 times. 4 years in a row, he's been all Spanish, league first team or second team, and he's won a silver medal at the Euro or I believe the World Championships with Argentina. So he's a winner first and foremost. But the difference between like what we're saying with Marcus Howard and him being 5'11" is he makes everybody else around him better.
Right.
He doesn't necessarily need to score.
Right.
So like, when you're looking at, okay, can he hack it on the defensive end? He's one of the biggest pests on the defensive end because he's one of those European guys that pick you up full court and they're always fouling and touching you and they're not calling it. And you're swipe, right? But then also, you know, he's not just for himself on the offensive end. He'll make every single guy around him better. So, and he's a winner. So I'm excited. I hope the Nuggets let him rock out. Watching him and Jokic on the court at the same time, especially in ball screen, should be like really, really fun.
Yeah, I am really intrigued by this dude. Some of those videos he sent me, I'm like, this dude,
he's wild.
He is wild, but he defends too. I mean, you mentioned that he's pesky. I have here in my notes he was a 2017 Euro Cup Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, and I don't think a lot of enough American NBA basketball fans have an appreciation for the level that he has played at. So while he's 29, he hasn't made it into the NBA, but he's playing in a league that is just phenomenal and not just surviving, but thriving in such a serious way.
Yeah. And it's the same reason why Luka Doncic, like everybody was surprised by what he's doing in the NBA, you know, or he went too high. Like, If people really understood the level of the EuroLeague and Real Madrid, which is where Campazzo and Doncic both played, then I mean they would have been buying all the stock in the world in Doncic. So I think it's going to be the same thing with Campazzo. As long as, you know, he's able to fit in, the NBA is a different game. It's a different game from college. It's a different game from Europe. So I'm excited. Nuggets fans should be excited too.
All right. I am really looking forward to seeing him out there. Dags, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate you coming on. It's always a fun conversation. I know we'll do it again at some point in the future, but have a great Thanksgiving, man, and thanks for coming by the Mile High Hoops podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Appreciate everyone stopping by as usual. Very thankful for you on this Thanksgiving. And we will check in again next week with another member of our esteemed Nuggets media here. All right, we'll leave it there, guys. Have a great day. Have a great Thanksgiving. And we'll see you next time on the Mile High Hoops podcast.
Oh, hey, didn't realize you were listening. Well, let's make this quick. And don't touch that dial. We're Rocky Mountain Forest Products, and we're not aggressive. We're passionate. And we're not going to blast you with facts you don't need. But when you do, visit rmfp.com. Whether you're in need of fencing, decking, or siding information, it's all there. And best of all, it's free. No one likes a salesman, so we're not going to sell you. Whether you need the info or not, just remember rmfp.com. You do you, Colorado. You do you.